Hello and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro. Today is episode number 159, and we're going to get into a topic, the title of today's show, very near and dear to my heart. Hunters, the original athletes. So right away, I want to welcome my friend Greg Keller to the show. It's a great honor and privilege to be chatting about this topic with a lifetime athlete and a lifetime hunter as well. Greg, thanks for being with me today.
John, thanks for having me. I look forward to the conversation.
So there's a backstory I can tell the listeners, and you know, it's one that makes me gleam and glow, and it's because recently we had a great adventure together. You had come up from the Valley of the Sun, Chandler, Arizona, and your Uncle Freddie and I and another friend, we went out and we had really just a great time, a great adventure, great fellowship, and a very successful hunt. And as we were, you know, kind of doing the things that we did and sitting around the campfire, I thought, gosh, your perspectives would be really valuable and welcome on the show. And of course, you said, I'd be happy to join you. And so here you are.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for us natives down here in Arizona, we were a little bit nervous coming up to Montana and all the extreme weather that can come with it. And we were lucky enough that we had a beautiful weekend all week when we were up there, and just really had a wonderful time with wonderful people. And, you know, really got to push ourselves quite a bit, both mind and body. And in the end, walked away successful, not only in the experience, but also you know, with some great meat to bring back down here and be able to feed the family and really sustain us for a long time. It was just a wonderful experience. So I thank you again for inviting us up to come join you.
Yeah, anytime. And that really sets the stage for this topic. So when we're talking about hunters as the original athletes, I'm hoping that some of the audience says, yeah, but then also some of our listeners are like, oh, would you explain exactly what you mean by that? So from an evolutionary and even a philosophical standpoint, I view hunters as the original athletes. And if we go back over 3 million years to Lucy, you know, the Australopithecus, and then through Homo habilis, Homo erectus, Homo sapiens, plus throwing Neanderthal in there, Neanderthal, humans have been hunter-gatherers. And I don't have anything against gatherers. It's not that gathering doesn't have elements of athleticism in it, but it really was the hunters whose pursuit was decidedly more athletic in many people's opinions.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. As I think back, growing up, I always said that running was the most pure sport. And the reason why I believed that was because everywhere throughout the world, we've all been around friends and we've said, hey, I bet you I can beat you to that light post. And that's really, for me at least, and I think for many people, kind of our first entry into sport or athleticism in today's day and age. And as we got talking and as I got thinking about this, you know, hunters back in the day were most likely the first professional athletes, if we will, or the first people that were looked to as the capabilities, the unique capabilities that they can bring or skill set, they provide something that others can't. And so it's really interesting when you think back, and of course, gathering was important and being able to find things, but really it was that athletic ability to get to either where the animals were or to have the patience to be able to wait one out to come through your path, or even the balance to be able to make a finishing strike with an atlatl or with a bow or with whatever it is that you're using. They really were, in my mind, kind of the first professional athletes, you know, and I think in many, in many tribes and many cultures, they were revered in that sense. And so, you know, you always hear about the great hunter, and it started very early on. So it's really interesting to me, and I agree with you that they were the original athletes. And as I think about today, I still consider many hunters, especially ones that do the things like we did, which is pushing a little bit further than you'd have to, and going a little bit deeper. It's still, to me, an athletic sport or something that pushes yourself just like an athlete does.
Oh, yeah. And I agree with you 100%. And sure, there are ways that, you know, we can do hunting and also I participate in that aren't maybe as athletic, but I would definitely say this, that hunting for big game in the backcountry is entirely athletic. And that is the original sport, if you will. So if we have hunters as original athletes, now we have these, or this pursuit, as you said, it was a profession, which really, really meant survival and propagation of the species.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. In the backcountry, even today, it just brings a unique set of circumstances that require you to really do that much more. And not saying other types of hunting isn't just as difficult or what have you, or tree stand hunting, kind of mentally difficult. But the backcountry and everything it takes from a physical standpoint, to me, is much more on the athletic side, and for me, much more enjoyable. Because as I talk to non-hunters, a lot of them will ask me, why do you do it? You have different options nowadays. You can just go to the grocery store. We have a lot of options around healthy grass-fed meats and those types of things. For me, it's not only the balance of going out and being able to harvest my own meat and knowing where it comes from and having that experience, but also pushing myself physically and a lot of times pushing myself in ways that I can't do on my own in my day-to-day life. And then the other component for me, John, is that mental push of being in that moment. Of, are you going to be able to execute the shot? Are you going to be able to humanely harvest that animal? And are you going to be able to kind of step up to that big moment? And especially in groups, when you have others looking at you and watching you, there's some pressure on that moment. I've never been in a key situation where I need to make free throws to win a game in the NBA. But I have been behind, a rifle when I have multiple people watching me and waiting for me to execute a shot that they've been waiting for days and going through the painstaking process of packing in there and hiking and doing all this stuff. And I've been successful with those shots, and I've also been unsuccessful with those shots. So to me, there's that balance of mental and physical.
Wow, that was a great explanation. And you kind of got me thinking about, in some ways, it's almost, as an original sport, if we want to stay on that theme, it's a weeding out process. And like you said, at the point when things matter, whether it's the free throw or you're harvesting the animal, it's really the world of convergent thinking. And the person who can narrow in and get the job done. And obviously, I want to be a person like that. I want to hang out with people like you who are that. It's just kind of what I want to do in life. I don't want to choke. I don't want to hang around chokers too much. So, just putting it out there. But yeah, I got just a couple points I'll make and move on. So, sport obviously has many definitions, but some of the ways that we just talked about, rang true for me. And originally it was merely the acquisition of high quality nutrition, one of the primary components of survival and to perpetuate humans. But then historically hunting became much more. I mean, we have cave art and other evidence that indicates how there's such a rich tradition and ritual surrounding the hunt. And animals were valued for their life-giving sustenance. And, you know, nowadays I think we lose track of that because everyone thinks meat comes from the grocery store, and to be engaged in the process more primitively, you know, has great benefit in my opinion. And that pursuit, although, you know, we're calling it sport today, it really was just integral to the human life experience. And all those things that you've kind of touched on, challenge, risk, preparation, celebration, there's so much richness of human existence, which revolved around the hunt as the sport.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to me, you know, when we talk about it being a sport versus, you know, I think kind of what you're hinting at is at one point it was a way of life, and now it's transitioned to a sport because in modern times, it doesn't have to be a way of life, therefore it kind of moves to sport. And, you know, for me, when I'm going out and doing these things and hunting animals and going through that experience, I do feel like I get away from the sport aspect and back into, you know, this is a way of life. And, you know, it's interesting when we talk about a way of procuring meat that you can have confidence in, you know, where it came from, and also, you know, feeding your family with it. I, for one, as a hunter, as you know, when I have wild game meat, I'm pretty selective of who I'm going to share with. I share with a lot of my family, but I only share with those who are going to value and who are going to use it and who aren't going to throw it away and let it just become freezer burn. Mm-hmm. And then the other interesting part about it is most hunters that I meet, if you are over to their house for dinner and let's say they're making burgers, and they have a regular beef patty and they have a venison patty, and they have each one left over, I can guarantee, maybe 90% confidence level here, that venison patty is going to be saved for later use. And I don't have that much confidence in the beef. And so I think there's just this like, very primal aspect that when you go out there and make the sacrifices and procure that there's much more inherent value to it. And for me, that's where it gets away from the sport aspect and into a way of life for me, especially with feeding my family and providing for my family.
Yeah, and that goes beyond sustenance to reverence. And I think I want to kind of talk about that in a bit. But the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, this being the lifetime athlete, and we're always talking about peak performance, and, you know, I have a training program, you know, so I've trained myself as a hunter. I've trained many hunters. I have a program called Fit for the Field that I have used for a number of years. And it's really because what I found was that the unique demands of hunting the backcountry, you actually have to prepare for them specifically, or doing so is advantageous. And, you know, I think about when we were out there and, you know, you and Freddie and I were covering some ground, you know, in, you know, mountainous terrain. Eventually there, you know, was an opportunity where we succeeded and we actually harvested two elk simultaneously, yours being a very nice trophy. And I don't say that lightly either. But then there was the reality of now we have to, you know, break these animals down into, you know, manageable quarters and such, and the things that we do, and pack them off the mountain, and then we get them to camp, and then there's all the, you know, the meat care and processing, and eventually when we leave, we were packing out heavy, you know, we were using livestock, but because of the great harvest and all of our camping equipment, you know, nobody was without load, mules or humans. And that was great. Yeah. Because like you said, you know, everybody that went out there knew what they were getting into, was serious about it, was prepared, and then was able to follow through, you know, and just deliver on, you know, the reality of the physicality. So it's my fairly short list. And Greg, I want to invite you, of course, to comment or elaborate if you see fit. You don't have to, but these are things I see necessary for hunting, especially in the backcountry. First of all, there's the tuned senses of sight and hearing and smell, perception, even instinct, and having proficiency with a variety of tools and weapons, and not just bows and guns and knives, axes, hammers. You know, when you're out there, you're doing things. You are surviving, and couple that with knowledge of terrain and weather and biology and energy conservation. So it's just a global kind of skill set and knowledge base that, to go out into particularly, you know, wilderness type areas without would be unwise.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I'll add, if I can, just a little bit of a story of our first day. Actually, when we were packing into the backcountry, we had between a 6 and 7 mile journey back to camp. We all had loaded packs. So, you know, ranging from probably, I don't know, anywhere from 40 to 60 pounds plus rifles. And as we were making our way back, we actually spotted some elk and had an opportunity actually at a 5x5 bull to actually chase it. And with all of that loaded on, actually went after probably about 3/4 mile. And John, people won't believe the story, but it literally was uphill in snow over deadfall that we were trying to chase down this bull. And we ended up not getting a shot, but it was still a great experience. However, we still had 2.5-3 miles back to camp. And then we were able to lighten our load with our packs. And then we were back out that night. And over the course of that day, I think we recorded some 15 miles of total movement. But during that time, we were also loading, picking up things, loading the mules, loading horses, procuring water, chopping firewood. So there was so many different movements. One could go out and run 15 miles on a trail, and you're never going to get quite the same workout and quite the same movements. And so preparing yourself with a lot of different movements and keeping your body kind of ready for what's next, I think, is critically important, especially if you're planning on doing something extreme like into the backcountry where you can't just get out the next day. So I completely agree. And that was just our first day, and we still had 5 days of hunting. But that just gives you kind of a little bit of a thought on what you need your body to prepare for.
Oh yeah, what an awesome trip. I love that story because, you know, as you were telling it, I remember it quite well. We had we'd spotted some elk, kind of in an opening, an old clear cut, and they were nonchalantly walking up the hill, higher up the mountain into the forest. And of course, there's at this location, there's snow on the ground at this time. And we thought, maybe we're going to try to make the play. And so we kind of, did the best sneaking job we could to get reasonably close. And then we waited till they got out of sight. And then we weren't necessarily running after the elk, but we were trying to get through this uphill snow-filled deadfall to possibly intercept, where they were going to come. And, I felt two things about that. Right away, that was, it wasn't like I had this planned, like there was somebody with a pen who released the elk, and this was the test to see if you guys could keep up or something. Not that at all, but we were able to test our physical ability. And we also were able to admire really the magnificent beast because, a human trying to move up a mountainside like that, going almost as hard as you can, will be outpaced easily by an elk who's unaware of your presence, who's just walking and feeding. And it's so staggering to think about, you know, these massive, powerful beasts. And, you know, and how I'm inspired by that, I'm sure you were too. And you kind of hit that next, yeah. What I have as a next point is it's all day durability. You know, you have to have enough conditioning and maybe mindset, optimism, willingness, whatever it is, to just be out there and like, okay, we're going to rock, you know, we're going to lift and carry, and we're going to split wood. And if you're durable enough where you can enjoy everything and not be flattened and exhausted, man, that's nice.
Yeah. It's a game changer. When you can feel good and feel like, wow, what an experience versus, you know, wow, I'm drained, after doing something like that and running after them, you know, you may have been walking quickly. I was running. as I remember, but it was just so amazing to be able to have that on day one. But it did push all of us. And it, you know, the other thing to think about is, had we not prepared, you know, throughout the year, many people can do that in a single day, but we still had multiple days behind that. And so, you know, yes, if you can push your body like that in one day, well, it doesn't mean too much if you can't do anything for the next 2 days. And so it's really training your body to be able to recoup quickly and go through those things. And then the other thing for me, John, is that headspace of being able to go on something like that and then be right back in the game and kind of have that, okay, let's go do the next thing. Let's go, you know, climb this mountain. Let's go look over here. Let's go chase this. And being ready for when things don't work out, just to be able to move on and say, okay, you know, next up, let's go.
Yeah. And I think you and I shared that. We've never talked about this, but that might be one of those, characteristics of the primitive hunter is, yeah, you know, it doesn't work out more often than it works out, and you have to just be prepared to keep going. And I'm going to blow through a couple of other thoughts I have, because I think you've already hinted at them. But you know, when I look at these demands, you know, so we talked a little bit about all the senses, and we talked about that durability, but then you'd already alluded to, okay, you have to negotiate rugged terrain, off trail. It's a different world than hiking on a path or walking on a sidewalk, for sure. The capacity to lift and carry loads, often in awkward positions, they don't have handles, there's all that business. And especially when now you're talking about, like say working with livestock and lifting and cinching things, grip strength. It's amazing how much grip strength is required to do those kinds of things. And then lastly, on my list of requirements is kind of like ownership of position, you know, to be able to balance as you're walking through that timber, to use kneeling and squatting and crouching. I mean, almost constantly, whether you're tending the Dutch oven at the campfire or, you know, or processing an animal. And so I think that I like to think about those requirements or demands when I'm thinking about training, because if we can prepare for them, then it gets a little easier. You don't feel as beat up as much. And, ultimately you have either more success or certainly more fun.
Yeah. If I, would sum all of that up, it would be, get comfortable being uncomfortable, because there's no Smith machines out there. There's no, you know, squat racks. Everything you're moving is a little bit awkward.
I love it. And so I've got to ask you, so, okay, you showed up and we were also at altitude, and I know that was also a factor for you guys, which you did so well with, and you're in great shape. So what does your general year-round training program currently look like, Greg?
So I, you know, for years I did, you know, high school sports and all of that, and then got into triathlons and then long distance running. And for a while I did primarily distance running and not much weight training. And I think that was a mistake when I think about my ability to get into the backcountry and be successful in hunting. And so for the past 2 to 3 years, I've made sure to incorporate a lot of weight training into my routine. And so what I do is I do about 4 days a week of weight training. And then I try to run 5 days a week on top of that. It may just be a 2 mile run with the dog, or I may get to the local mountain here, which is called South Mountain, south side of Phoenix, and be able to do some hills and get some distance in. But I try to mix the running up, just to keep it kind of fresh and new. And then what I've been doing for the past year is actually, I go to a place locally here that's called The Hub, where we do high intensity interval training as a group. And I've really enjoyed that. It's a good mixture of everything we've talked about, where, you know, you are going from doing push-ups or pull-ups to doing squats, and really kind of keeping your body questioning what's next. And so doing that 4 days a week really prepares me for a lot of what the requirements are in the backcountry. And then, you know, for me, the other component is really getting mentally prepared and knowing that, you know, as I'm sleeping in a cot, I'm not going to feel 100%, but I know my body can do it. And so there's some things that I do, whether it's getting out and running early in the morning, and, you know, it might feel good to wear your sweatshirt and feel all warm and cozy, but sometimes you might need to get out there in a t-shirt and have a little bit of that uncomfortability. And so I try to, you know, a couple times a week, just put myself in a little bit of those uncomfortable positions. And I try to look at it from more of a fun standpoint, John, of, you know, I got through that. My wife often makes fun of me because, although it's not as cold as it is up there, you know, jumping in the pool, and getting a little shock to the system, during the winter time, I find is kind of nice. And so kind of keeping your body questioning. So I'd say those are kind of my primary things is making sure I get the miles in, get the cardio in, doing that high intensity interval training. And then finally, you know, making sure I'm getting myself in uncomfortable positions a little bit when I can.
So I picked up a few things from that. You know, first of all, it is fun to train and do vigorous things. And you obviously love that comes through. I also heard you almost saying you build a reasonable margin a lot of times where things that you're going to encounter are either familiar or not as hard in many cases as what you regularly do in training. So I'm learning from you there. And then I've got this story. We had been on the mountainside. It was steep where the elk came to rest. And, you know, we had finished up all that work and the hauling. And so we were, you know, I would say a bit tired and dirty and sweaty. And so you and I got back and we headed right into the creek, which we didn't have to break the ice to get in, but there was ice upstream from the pool that we jumped into and took our bucket bath. And I think that we peer pressured Freddie into putting his ankles in.
Yeah, that is right. Well, I have to say after a successful harvest that morning, that was just a great bath or shower or whatever you want to call it. Because I think we did, I think you originally, I was planning on just doing one bucket, but you had done three. And so I couldn't back down. So I had to do three full buckets in that shower. But it sure did feel good.
Yeah, it definitely after perhaps better, more than during for me. So if I, you know, we're maybe not too close from wrapping up, but I want to talk a little bit about specific training and exercises that we think can benefit hunters, you know, that because of these experiences that we have, we're also, you know, that that we've used. And I'll just real quickly, I think the audience, any regular listener is going to know this, but I classify all training as it relates to the five capacities of human performance. Those are strength, speed, power, agility, and endurance. And since I've been pretty much hunting for a lifetime and studying human performance for all of my professional career, I'd have to say that an apex hunter needs all those five capacities. And, you know, this could be an argument. You might be able to downplay speed and power a bit, but strength, general strength, endurance, and some amount of agility, you know, makes a hunter more capable. As far as one of those five capacities, Greg, what would you emphasize in training, you know, based on your experience, you know, which one of those five might you pick?
You know, if I had to emphasize one, I think it would be overall endurance. You know, especially as you're pushing yourself into the backcountry. And when we think about apex hunters, the ones that are truly going and getting those unique animals that, you know, live back there or may have never seen a human, that endurance is to me the most important. And secondarily, I would actually, John, personally, I'd put strength up there as number two. And oftentimes, I think for a lot of people that that haven't been hunting before, you don't realize that after the harvest, that's when the work actually comes. And that's when there is a lot of strength that has to be put in, especially when you're talking about a beast as large as an elk. To really take care of the meat and make sure you do it in a way that you are getting kind of everything you can out of that animal. There's a large amount of strength that is needed, especially if you're in harsh terrain and deep into the backcountry.
Couldn't agree more. So here's a short list. It's my top five exercises that I like to recommend for hunters and that I use, and maybe we'll just go through one at a time. It relates to what you said about endurance and strength, this first one, which is off trail hikes with a backpack, with a loaded backpack.
Yeah, absolutely, got to do it. And I will add to that. When you're talking about off trail, make sure you're doing some side hilling, because there's going to be some times where, you're going to have to side hill. So that is not walking straight up and down the hill, but actually kind of contouring around as you think about contour lines on the map. Mm-hmm. And if you have a heavy pack on and you haven't done that and you haven't prepared, the number one thing I've seen people struggle with is their ankles. Mm-hmm. And they may not feel it in the moment, but the next day, all of your tendons and everything that has never felt that before will really be hurting. So when you're getting off trail, make sure you're not just going, you know, up and down, but you're actually side hilling, to make sure you're getting those ankles, strength as well.
Fantastic point. Okay. Next one, short, steep uphill reps. Either done running, if one does that in training, or walking / power hiking.
Yeah, and I would emphasize here, you know, I'm one that I love to run hills. Freddie and I often have little competitions where we call ourselves speed goats and see who can fly to the top of the mountain the quickest. Probably not what you need for hunting. That steady cadence of being able to go uphill and keep your heart rate down, because if something does happen, you're going to have to keep that heart rate down to make a shot. So, you know, just because you're not the fastest up the hill, just more of that consistency uphill, to me is more important.
Yeah. And I can think about, the, hillside where you were working above us, I don't know, I'm exaggerating, probably 70 or 80 yards up. And I don't know what the grade or degree of that slope was, but it going up and down it multiple times, you know, you had to really dig in and almost go to your hands to go up it. And, you know, to just to be prepared to do that, both in terms of, you know, the strength, the cardiovascular demand, and like you indicated, like with the ankles, and in this case, like the Achilles tendons, that's a reality that comes up more often than not.
Yep. And where that animal comes to rest is where it comes to rest. You don't get to pick that place. So be prepared to get there.
Yeah. Rarely is that flat.
Yeah.
Okay. So next exercise, that I think is just a big bang for your buck for any human, any athlete, but particularly any hunter, is the deadlift, regardless of what variation you want to use. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I agree. I think deadlift is definitely something that just has a lot of value across the board. And I'd also emphasize that it doesn't have to be a straight bar deadlift, you know, using different types of weight, whether it's kettlebells or even barbell or dumbbells. Just making sure you're getting all the way down and lifting off the ground, I think is really important, especially post-harvest.
Yes. No, not making fun of this at all. Deadlift and dead weight often go together quite well.
Yeah. For some reason, dead weight seems a little heavier. I don't know why.
It does. And only those who've experienced it can appreciate the depth of that comment. I also like loaded carries as my next one. Just being able to hold on to stuff and move with it. And so there any type of, whether it's a farmer's walk, suitcase carry, different like rack position holds. It seems like that comes in so handy, lifting things and holding them when you're working with livestock or building a camp or carrying a bone-in elk quarter on your shoulder down that hill.
Yeah, it's really important and being able to have that grip strength. And one of the things that I often do, John, to kind of focus here is I'll do suitcase lunges. So we're actually holding a dumbbell in one hand or the other as you're doing lunges. And it actually kind of pulls you, you know, a little bit off center. So you have to, you know, not only balance and get yourself back, but also you have that grip strength component. So I find those are very useful.
Love that. Super functional. And maybe my last one, I would also put squats in my list, but actually with less of an emphasis on really going heavy for maybe like a lot of hypertrophy type things, but more on just a variety of techniques for mobility and position management, just as much as strength.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I'm one, I know, especially for us taller guys, squats are not fun, but they're necessary. So for me, you know, this is one of the reasons why I really enjoy going to the hub where I have others that will push me. Because, you know, we all have that thing that we just don't love to do on our own. For me, that's squats, but I do think they're critical for success and just for kind of balance in the backcountry.
Yeah, and speaking of that, you just made me, it's a slightly tangential thought, but so we have this online training community at the Lifetime Athlete. So it's basically like a virtual health club or gym, and our team, the Training Tribe, they get programming every week. They get it in text table and video format, and we have a forum where we communicate, but we also have a weekly masterclass, which is kind of a Zoom meeting and it's optional to participate. We did one which was sort of a group share on squatting, and so we look at, you know, some of the different methods and techniques, and then we kind of morph that into a workout. And it's fun to, I don't want to say suffer together, because not all of it was suffrage, but there's something, like you said, there's something about sharing that energy. I mean, I think in a brick and mortar facility, it can be even more powerful, but done well across the screen. I noted that the response was pretty good, equally perhaps so. Maybe I'll turn it over to you, because I don't think we have to dissect every exercise in the world, but do you have any bonus moves that you often will do in training that you either do especially for hunting or that you have found relate well?
You know, the biggest thing that I do often to prepare for hunts is a lot of body weight exercise, and oftentimes to failure. So think push-up, pull-ups, non-weighted squats, and really, not just to get that balance and make sure you're kind of attacking those small muscles and feeling those out, but also, you know, when you're going to failure, you're pushing yourself to that end. And for me, I like to make an assessment of where that's at, because when I am in the backcountry, you're going to be pushing yourselves, but it's also important to note, you know, what that point is. You know, if you load up your pack and you squat it up, and you can barely get it up, and it's that point of failure for you, then, you know, you should take some of that off and make two trips. And so it's really important for me that I know where my body's at for that point of failure. And I typically do that with body weight exercises versus doing a lot of weights. So push-ups, pull-ups, dips, sit-ups, and really seeing where my body's at to go all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that I got a couple thoughts out of that. You get a bit of mobility and agility with any movement, but particularly when you start doing those body weight movements. So there's a nice crossover effect there. And I think I want to reiterate for any listener your wisdom on load management. And this has been my story for decades, being kind of a slim fellow. I know my limitations, and so I would much rather get myself into shape so that I can pack multiple loads than trying to stagger with a max load, which could lead to injury and is definitely going to lead to more exhaustion than is necessary. And, I've learned that the hard way, but definitely I would encourage others, hey, if you can get your conditioning up and you know what your limits are, multiple trips is the way that it always has been done.
Yeah, I agree. But I will say for anyone that plans or will go hunting with John, is whatever he puts on his back, take a little bit off that to put on yours. Because as much as you say you'll take multiple trips, I've seen what you can pack out. And it's pretty impressive.
Well, you're too kind, and I salute you back. But kind of moving this whole, I think this show's been going great, and it's just a great discussion. I'm really appreciative of you taking the time to visit with me, Greg. And I want to speak a little bit, or allow you to speak more so, on the field to freezer to table journey. And right away, just what does that mean for you? Because I know it's very important to you. And how do you honor the animal that you harvest?
Yeah, for me, this is the most important part of what I do as a hunter, is when I am taking that animal's life, I want to make sure that I am honoring it by, not only doing it a humane way by practicing with whatever I'm going to be using to make sure it's a humane kill, but also after that, making sure I'm using every component of that animal that I can. Most of the time it's the meat, but also, the heart and liver, hide and just the different things that you can take from that animal, to me, that's a really important component of my journey as a hunter, is that that I'm honoring that animal in that way, by not having it sacrificed for no reason, that there is a use to what I'm doing. And for me, it's a very personal experience. I can tell you, last night, my wife and I and my son actually had elk steak from the elk that was harvested with John, and it means a lot to me to be able to bring that back to my family. And every single time I do cook with what was taken from that animal, I think back to that journey and that experience. And for me, it's a way of honoring that animal, and really appreciating what it's provided for us, not only me, but my entire family.
I think that honor is the key word there. And I agree. I mean, I can't speak for anyone else, but I think I can speak for you and I. It's like, well, if we, you know, tan a hide, which if anyone's never done, tan their, you know, the hide from an animal that they've harvested, it's a lot of work, but it's one way to appreciate the animal and then have, you know, that animal's presence and the animal's artistic nature around. And the same thing goes for, you know, these racks. Those are not put out as some type of ego related thing by any means. I think maybe some people do that. Maybe other people think that, but I think what it is again, to appreciate the gift, the ultimate gift of that beast, and to always, you know, be spiritual about it.
Yeah, and I get that it's not for everyone. You know, I can tell you my wife doesn't love a full mount of much, but you know, for me, being able to have that, you know, some people call it a trophy. Other people call it something to remember it by. To be able to have that and be able to go back and relive those memories, you know, to me, it's a really important thing. And you know, it's not an ego thing, but really being able to just look at it and say, "Wow, you know, what an amazing experience! What an amazing animal! What an amazing adventure!"
And that leads right into this next thing about meat care. I think you and I are equally fastidious, try to be, you know, in the field and also doing our own home butchering. Any comments or tips that you've got for anyone out there, either who already is doing it or is interested in taking it up?
You know, I would say the biggest thing is make sure you've set aside time to be able to do it. Especially when you're talking about home butchering, to really do it in the right way, it's going to take a little bit of time. And you shouldn't feel rushed while doing it. I found the first couple of beers that I did at home, John, a lot of that ended up turning into grind, which is because I probably didn't take my time to get all of the good quality steaks that I could have gotten out of those animals. And so making sure you have the time to be able to do so, and not feeling rushed is really important. And there are a lot of resources, even today, you know, here in Arizona, we get one tag a year when you're talking about deer. And typically when you're putting in for elk, you get drawn every 5 to 7 years. And so it's not something you did last weekend. It's not something you did last month, unless you're, you know, working in the butcher industry. So there's a lot of resources, and even myself on YouTube, I find myself going back and looking up, you know, every time I go back to try to make a specific cut or do something. And so I just encourage people to take their time when they're doing it at home and have time to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing I would say, John, that has been a game changer for me, which I don't know how you do freezing, but having a vacuum sealer and being able to vacuum seal my meat, has, to me, that has just been a game changer. in ease of use, and also just not having to worry about freezer wrapping stuff. I just found that that vacuum sealer is just amazing.
Yeah, great tips. I think having the time, also not rushing with for safety with knives and such, but you know, having kind of a clean setup, and I also have a vacuum sealer. I think it works. It definitely works great for a lot of things, and extends your freezer life quite a bit because it gets all the air out. And then even like, there's nothing wrong with using standard butcher paper or freezer paper and the tape and, you know, maybe plastic wrapping in addition to that, and getting good at that where it doesn't look like the Christmas presents I wrapped up when I was a kid. You know, there's an art to all of that, of course. And I know you're laughing because we've all done that. Moving right into the table though, do you have a favorite meal or meals and recipe to possibly share?
Sure. With steaks, whether it's backstrap or anything from the back quarter, I typically will do a low smoke on it to get it up to temperature, and then do a reverse sear on a cast iron and to get that good crust on it. To me, that is the best way I've found to still have tender wild game that's also cooked all the way through. For some reason, I haven't mastered just the open grill and throwing it on. I always get tough, which I'm fine with. But if you're wanting other people to enjoy the game that you cook, being able to make it tender, that reverse sear method, I think they call it, is my favorite for steaks. And then the other thing I've really enjoyed with ground is making a little kind of Asian lettuce wrap. And using you know, some crunchy, you know, peanuts and different things in it, and then using either butter or Boston lettuce to kind of make a little Asian lettuce wrap, and that's a hit with my wife. And so anything that's a hit with my wife eating wild game, we do quite a bit here in our household. So those are my two go-tos right now that I'm really enjoying.
Great stuff. Thank you. And, you know, maybe the nutritional impact of wild game in your diet or in the human diet overall. Obviously, I think you said one thing we all have to do as hunters is prepare food in a way that our family enjoys it. And you've mastered that too. You know, from what I read, most of the wild game that we're harvesting, obviously it's very lean, whether or not that's your goal in your diet, but it tends to have a higher density of minerals than most domestic livestock. That's probably a no-brainer given, you know, the environments that these wild animals live in. But I find that there's something about it that goes beyond placebo of eating the game that just, it's probably the highest quality protein that we can get. That's opinion more than fact. But, you know, what do you think, Greg?
I'd have to agree. You know, the way I measure kind of the health of what I'm eating is a little bit different than most. I do look at the nutrition facts and look at labels and all of that kind of stuff. But I've always found my best measurement is just how does my body perform after I've consumed that? And what I've found with wild game is my body just performs better. It rebounds after hard workouts better. I'm less sore, or at least sore for shorter periods of time. And then I feel less lethargic. If I do have a steak, the next morning, I don't feel quite ready to kind of spring out of bed and go get my workout in. But I've found, you know, if I have an elk steak and finish it with maybe some grass-fed butter, I feel great in the morning. And so for me, whether it's placebo or not, I feel better with it. And so I have to believe it's better. And, you know, as we're seeing a lot of this nutrition studies and people talk about, you know, grass fed versus grain and grain finished and just all the different ways people are trying to make sure their red meat specifically is taken care of. All of that wild game is already doing on its own. It's already out there living in that environment where there's not cages and it's doing what it normally does in its natural environment. And it's eating, you know, what is healthy for it to eat at that time. And so for me, it's got to, I'm not a nutrition expert, but between, what I feel after consumption and then what I see, I think it has to, and I encourage people to try to, you know, try it out and ask themselves that same question of how is my body performing after I've consumed this?
Wow. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. I think a couple of years ago, I did a little piece. It may have been on the podcast. I'd have to check to be sure, but it was called Rewilding the American Palate. At least I think that was the title. And, you know, kind of that whole idea is like, well, you know, if it might be a process, it might not be immediate, because as modern humans, you know, we are adapted to certain tastes and certain hyperpalatable foods, but to eventually get to the point where we crave and appreciate the delicious nature of, well, nature's bounty, that may be a good goal for us in this day and age. And gosh, what a great discussion, great conversation we had. I appreciate all of the wisdom that you shared with us, and you're just a fun guy to hang out with, Greg. Any parting words or tips, anything you'd like to say related to hunters as the original athletes?
No, I think I just, you know, want to say thank you for your time and such a great conversation, and you know, made me think a little bit deeper into this topic, which I'm no expert. But you know, the only other thing that I just kind of in re-engaging and talking with you about these experiences that pops into my mind is when we talk about athletics, you know, we talk about individual athletes, and then we also talk about teams. And if you are going on a hunt with people, you are part of a team. And it's really important when you think about who those teammates are, that you have, you know, like-minded individuals that also, you know, you're going to enjoy being with. And when time gets tough, you're going to enjoy how each one of them react. May not always be perfect, but John, I just think that when we think about, you know, going on an adventure like this, or if people are thinking about doing something like this, they really need to think about who they're going to do it with. Because that can make or break the experience, just like, you know, an individual athlete can make or break a team sport or a team that's doing a sport. And in this case, you know, with John and with Freddie and Mark and everybody that was on our team, we just had like-minded approaches to, you know, we're going to make this fun. We're going to push ourselves. You know, not everything's going to be perfect. We're going to make mistakes, but we're going to be forgiving to one another. And so, you know, it is important to prepare yourself as an individual athlete, but it's also important to look at that team you're going out there with and how are you going to perform together. And you know, we were just, I am just so lucky to be able to go out there with our team that we went out with and just really share an amazing experience. But I encourage others to think about that if they're going to go and seek a like experience, is to think about that team.
That's just a great point, Greg. The human experience, the hunting, the sport, the teams. We had a 10 out of 10 experience. I think I had a 10 out of 10 talking with you today on the pod. So thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Yep. And thanks, listeners, for listening. We'll catch you next time.